This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. On today's roundtable, we've got Hillary Clinton inching closer to making a presidential bid, an Arizona cop who tells two black males he won't ticket them if they rap. So joining us today from our New York bureau, we've got Michael Myers, executive director of the New York Civil Rights Coalition. He is not a rapper. Laura Washington, Chicago Sun-Times columnist at member station WLRN in Miami. To my knowledge, she is not a rapper, and at member station WRNI in Providence, Rhode Island. Glenn Lowry, professor of the social sciences and economics at Brown University, also not a rapper. Thanks, everybody, for being with us.
This is Michael Myers. I can rap.
Oh, you can rap. All right. Yes, well, you might have to demonstrate later on. Let's.
I don't know if I want to hear that.
Turn down your headphones. So let's start with some serious news. First, the Senate refused to confirm him. Now UN Ambassador John Bolton is stepping down from his temporary appointment. President Bush accepted his resignation yesterday, although he said he wasn't happy about it. Now, this is a situation where John Bolton didn't have a lot of friends, including in Congress. He is just the latest in a long line of administration officials to sort of bow out. What does this say, and who should be considered? Glenn, I'll start with you.
Well, it says that the Democrats won the election last month, and that Bolton, I think, just didn't have the stomach for going through some fight. Evidently, the president was willing to put up a fight. I think the chances that Bolton could have been approved by the Congress were essentially zero, and he's decided to withdraw. I guess it raises the question, though, in these next last couple of years of the Bush presidency as to whether or not on other important matters of appointment where the administration and Congress are likely to differ, particularly federal judgeships, there's going to be more fighting, consternation, and obstruction, or whether or not the president and the Congress are going to be able to put their heads together and agree on a kind of consensus for governing the country over the next 2 years. We'll see.
Laura?
Well, as Glenn pointed out, the election has sent a message, and I think that to answer Glenn's concerns, I think that this administration realizes they're not going to be able to get a very conservative, very divisive appointees like Bolton through this Congress, and so they're going to change their tune in terms of who they push. Obviously, Bolton was very conservative. That was the problem that many, both Democrats and Republicans, had with him from the very beginning. And many people saw him as being someone. You know, there was a lot of criticism about him being aggressive, him being pugnacious, and I think that was the intent of the administration. They wanted someone to go in there, and in fact, to really take on the UN and take on the image of the UN and do some real reform. Forms that I don't think that the UN is ready for. So that they were really making an aggressive move by bringing him in. The moves that they make in the future are going to be much less aggressive. They're not going to try to push folks through like this because they'll never get anywhere with it.
Michael, do you think at this point the administration is going to go back to the UN and say, hey, sorry, we played tough. We kind of need your help in that Iraq situation. Are we going to see a more conciliatory tone from the administration towards the UN?
No. Does that answer your question?
It does, but can you expand?
I can't think of anyone who was more aggressive and more pugnacious than Daniel Patrick Moynihan, who was the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. I just can't think of anyone who was. John Bolton, who bolted from the nomination, did so because the votes were not there in the committee to get out of committee. He would have had the votes had it gone to the floor in this current Congress. But, you know, you got to remember, he was a recess appointment. In other words, he was never confirmed by the United States Senate and President Bush in an effort to put him in place and show the Congress what he could do while he was there, put him in a recess appointment, which is fastly coming to an end. But that didn't do it because there were Republicans on the Foreign Relations Committee who also opposed John Bolton. So there is no question in my mind that had he gotten out of the committee, the majority of the current Congress, the Republican majority, would have voted for him. But I think that the role of the United Nations is not defined by the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. The role of the United Nations vis-a-vis the United States is how President Bush sees the United Nations, and he uses it for his own purposes, and he doesn't use it when he doesn't want to use it.
All right, well, let's go from one side of the aisle to the other, just quickly moving along to another political topic. It looks like Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton might be putting together a potential campaign staff for a White House bid in 2008. All right, if John Bolton says that the Democrats have won, what does Hillary Clinton's potential campaign say about the Democrats? Laura.
Well, the New York Post had a great headline this morning. They basically said, "I'm in," and sort of quoting Hillary Clinton. She's definitely in. Newspapers like the New York Post love that because, of course, New York Post is tense toward conservatism, and they see her as being a very difficult candidate for the Democrats. I think that right now Hillary Clinton is getting in and getting in early because of one, Barack Obama. Barack Obama announced, of course, 6 weeks ago that he was seriously considering a run. He has already started to organize in places like New Hampshire and Iowa. It's looking very likely that he's going to run, and there's only so much air that any of these high-profile star candidates can suck up. You've got advisors, you've got money. Barack Obama was in New York yesterday because he knows that's Hillary territory. He knows there's a lot of money there. So there's going to be a really mad scramble running up to Obama's announcement on the part of many Democrats, not just Hillary, you know, people like John Edwards and Tom Vilsack out of Iowa, to try to get some of these Democratic resources under their hats.
All right. Scooping up the money. I guess that's part of it, mm-hmm. Glenn. What do we think? It's not clear to anyone yet until they file whether or not Hillary Rodham Clinton or Barack Obama are actually going to run. Is America ready? I know this is a question that gets asked a lot, for a black president or a female president.
Sure. I don't see why not. I mean, you know, some of America is never going to be ready for either one of those things. There will be much consternation and gnashing of teeth if it looks like Hillary Rodham Clinton or Barack Obama, for that matter, could actually get themselves elected. But I think on the whole, looking at the country, it's certainly possible. I say run, Hillary, run. And I think Laura's exactly right. Obama is forcing her hand. I mean, she can't just sit back. She's been, mounting this effort for some while, and now she's got to actually make a move. So it's going to be very interesting, I think.
Well, Michael?
Well, you know, Glenn says run, Hillary, run. I say go, Hillary, go back to the United States Senate. What are you doing? You just got elected to your second term as the junior senator from New York. And despite avowed uncertainty, only a month ago, by the way, about whether or not she was going to run for president, she's now announcing that she's going to be exploring a presidential run. On the basis of what record? On the basis of what experience? On the basis of what resume?
I just want to pick up on your point, Michael. What about Barack Obama? He's been in office even less time, a couple years, and he's talking about a run. Would you say the same thing to him? He's not ready?
I certainly would say the same thing about Barack Obama. Okay. I say on the basis of what experience, on the basis of what resume. You know, but Barack Obama is a different subject because, you know, he's the flavor of the month or the year. He's black, he's attractive, he's all that other stuff.
But that doesn't hate on Barack.
But he's not presidential timber. He probably has more gravitas than Hillary Clinton, though. I mean, all she has is that she's the wife
really
of a former president. She's the former wife of a former president. Did I say former wife of a former president? She's the wife of a former president.
You're going to really get the women fired up on this.
That's
one.
Right. The letter segment will be
wife?
Full. Okay, guys.
Letters, we get letters.
I would simply say this. Hillary Clinton has way more preparedness to become president of the United States than does the guy who's sitting in that office right now than he did have when he began running himself.
All right, we got to move along.
Of course she's qualified to be president. I can't be any doubt about that.
Okay. Want to move along to a couple more topics. We've got over the weekend, you know, the New York City groom who was gunned down by undercover officers was laid to rest at the church he intended to be married in. Last night, for the first time, his fiance came on and talked to Larry King. Let's take a listen.
Actually, to be honest, I'm really not angry. I'm more just trying to be strong and... we just want justice. That's it. And that's what we're praying for and we're hoping for.
And Reverend Al Sharpton joined the conversation. He said they're hoping Sean Bell's death will spark change.
When I got the call from a family member and came within hours and spent the last several days with them, these are solid people that just want to see fairness and that just want to hope Sean Bell's legacy is that this stops, whether it's here, whether it's in Atlanta with a 92-year-old woman. Something has to break the cycle where those police that step out of bounds feel they can get away with it.
Michael, you're in New York City. What's the mood? Is this still occupying people's headlines, people's minds?
It's more of the same. You know, you have Diallo, you have Louima, you have, these are great and famous names in New York, Eleanor Bumpers, Michael Stewart. The list goes on and on and on and on of African-American, usually young African-American men, sometimes African-American grandmothers like Eleanor Bumpers, who get killed as a result of questionable, at best questionable, police conduct and shootings. I don't think there's going to be justice here, though. I have to make a prediction because it's more of the same. The same rabble rousers come up and say the same thing, no justice, no peace, and they have, and talk about a record of accomplishment. There is no record of accomplishment after all the protests over Diallo's killing. You know, we have called for the appointment of a special prosecutor because we don't believe the Queens District Attorney has the credibility to conduct an investigation of this killing.
I'm sorry. When you say we, the New York Civil Rights Coalition,
and Norman Siegel, former director of the New York Civil Liberties Union, and 100 blacks in law enforcement who care in New York. Several people in the civil rights community have called for the appointment of a special prosecutor because we believe that cops can't investigate cops and that the DAs are too close to cops who they must rely on for the investigation witnesses of their garden variety crimes. But 50 bullets are 50 bullets. And I say that, Spitzer, the governor-elect in New York, his motto has been, you know, day one, everything changes. Well, day one, Mr. Spitzer, began on November 25, and you should insist and speak up now for the appointment of a special prosecutor by Governor Pataki, and if he won't do it, then Governor-elect Spitzer, on day one, should appoint a special prosecutor and supersede the Queens DA.
Laura, do you agree that that tactic could work?
I think that tactic is certainly worth trying, and it has rarely been used in places like New York and Chicago. In Chicago, we've had what I call this black and blue problem. This is not a New York problem. Michael cites a long list of victims. We have a list just as long in Chicago. We have a guy named John Burge, who was a police commander who for many years in the 1980s tortured criminal suspects, African-American suspects, who were later, in many cases, forced to confess and ended up on death row for confessions for crimes that they didn't commit. That man right now is sitting in Florida in retirement, precisely because there was resistance over many, many years to appoint a special prosecutor to bring in an independent agency. Michael's right. The cops and the state's attorneys around this country are too closely aligned to be able to be independent of each other. By the time the special prosecutor was appointed, there's been a finding that there's been torture and much else committed by this guy. It's too late to prosecute him.
The statute of limitations.
Michael's position on this is absolutely right, and maybe that will bring about some of the real change that I think the Al Sharptons keep claiming that they're after. But again, as Michael points out, they've never really been able to accomplish.
Glenn, what's the solution in cases like this?
Accountability. Accountability is the solution. Somebody has to pay. Lives have to be ruined. People with guns, licensed to kill, in effect, on the streets of the cities of America, when they abuse their authority and slaughter innocent people, they have to be made to pay. Now, I don't know whether or not a special prosecutor will get it done, but I'll support it.
All right, I'm glad we've got Michael Myers there.
Yeah,
but we definitely want to hear more about this. But in the meantime, we have one last topic. This is also about policing. It's much lighter in tone. Now, city leaders in Tempe, Arizona, apologized for a local cable program showing a white cop telling two black men that they could get out of a littering ticket by rapping. Let's listen to a little bit of this.
No littering ticket if the two of you just do a little rap. What do you want to rap about today? Littering?
The dangers of littering, you will get a ticket. If you ain't with it, you better be experienced because...
Yo, I just got pulled over because I threw my trash out the window when they rolled over. They got behind me and pulled me over. Well, I'm down here in Maricopa.
Down here in Maricopa, you can get out of a ticket by rapping. I don't even know what to say. Glenn, what do you have to say?
Well, yeah, what I'd say is that, first of all, everybody was laughing as I read that story. The guys who asked to rap were laughing. The cop was laughing. The cop even broke out in a little rap of himself. It was all very light and funny. But that stuff ain't funny. And what's not funny about it was just illustrated by the story we were talking about a minute ago. I mean, it's the same racial stereotyping, the same instantaneous reaction to the color of the guy's skin in the car that you think he's a certain type of person, and then you're going to deal with him in a certain way. Out there in Tempe, Arizona, we got blacks, therefore they must be rappers. In New York City, we've got a bridegroom, therefore he must be a thug. The same racial stereotyping can lead to disastrous consequences, and that's the core of the problem.
Well, I suppose I agree with Glenn on this one because, you know, it's you got also there's another factor here. This was a TV show. This was Tempe's version of Cops, which is a you know television cameras follow the cops as they patrol areas. And so the cop must have known and did know that he was being videotaped. And but you know the racial stereotype and the offense, as I understand it, was littering, as opposed to just being stopped for driving while black. So the question was, it was a minor offense at best, and I think it was the motivating factor was entertainment for the TV camera, and I think the young people who were involved in the car understood that and got out of a situation. This is what we advise young people, by the way. When you're in a situation mm-hmm. with people who have badges and guns, you be compliant.
Do
you
whatever
get
they say,
out
huh?
of the situation yeah. until you're on solid civilian ground.
Laura?
In Chicago, they're actually distributing manuals to young people that advise them on how to kind of conduct themselves around cops. The thing that I found so disturbing about this, and it doesn't get discussed with these black-blue encounters, is about the issue of power and who has the power. The cop in this video says to these guys, you know I'm right. He says something like, you know I'm right. I got a gun and a badge. That means I'm always right, right? And everybody laughs, but that's absolutely true. Power is these guys have power in that gun and that badge. And that makes this a very inequitable situation, whether everybody's laughing or not. And that power can be very dangerous. It can be lethal.
All right. On that note, we're going to have to leave it there. Laura Washington, Chicago Sun-Times columnist. Michael Myers, executive director of the New York Civil Rights Coalition.
I didn't get a chance to rap.
You know what?
That's okay.
You'll be back next week, and you can rap then. Glenn Lowry, professor of the social sciences and professor of economics at Brown University. That's all right. Take us out. Take us out with a little rap. No, just kidding.